Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Ah! Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Joining us tonight is someone at the forefront of that effort, holding the Chinese accountable, that is, Congressman Jim Banks, a member of the House Armed Services, Education, and Veterans Affairs Committees. He has introduced a resolution condemning China, also demanding reparations from China for the untold damage and loss of life that they have caused. Congressman, great to have you with us. Let's start with, I'd like to start with $3.7 million that the National Institutes of Health are giving a virology laboratory, a government virology laboratory, in Wuhan, China.
That's a great place to start, Lou. And my constituents are demanding answers to that. And as it becomes more and more clear that while China took our jobs, they've given us this virus in return, they should be held accountable for doing such. My constituents are demanding that I go to Washington and fight to hold China accountable. We've looked into ways to do that. Every day you're hearing more and more politicians talk about holding China accountable. How can we do it? Well, one way that we can do it is to submit China to an international court of justice through the UN and explore all of the violations that China has made dating back to the 2005 international health regulations that China, the U.S., and over 100 countries signed on to. These health regulations, Lou, were specifically designed to stop the spread of a pandemic. And China has violated so many of those regulations that there is an open door, an avenue through the UN that Secretary of State Pompeo and Attorney General Barr can go to the UN and demand that China be submitted to this International Court of Justice. Now, we know that China probably will veto that. They'll reject that opportunity. But Articles 49 through 51 of the UN lay out a series of repercussions that the United States and other countries can take if China refuses to submit themselves to that, like preventing flights to and from China or blocking China into the WTO or even broadcasting Western media into mainland China or Taiwan. Those are specific ramifications that are laid out within those articles. The United States should take advantage of that and hold China accountable by submitting them to an international court of justice.
Well, there's no shortage of evidence that the Chinese are trying to cover up their role in, as the origin of this virus and this deadly pandemic they unleashed on the world. There is no shortage of evidence that they continue to steal our intellectual property. There is no shortage of evidence that they intend to continue their expansive, and that's the nicest word for it, hegemonic ambitions, whether it be in the South China Sea or in Africa or around almost any continent in this world. I mean, there's just no doubt about what they're doing. I don't see any way in which it could be handled diplomatically. I don't see any way in which it could be handled legalistically because, frankly, Congressman, they obviously don't give a damn about our laws or anyone else's.
There's no question about it, Lou. You nailed it. But these are opportunities that we have in front of us that we can take advantage of. Now, you and I both agree the UN isn't worth much, but this is an opportunity for them to redeem themselves as a legitimate international organization by doing what it was intended to do. And going back to these 2005 international health regulations, let's enforce them and let's expose what China and where China violated those regulations in allowing this pandemic to spread and lying about it all the while in a way that will embarrass China on the international scene. We know that other countries like India and Spain want to join us in those efforts. We should welcome that support, and Secretary of State Pompeo and Attorney General Barr have one powerful avenue to do exactly that.
Yeah, I love the fact that the Secretary of State informed the Governors Association that he was keenly aware of which among them was considered friendly, these governors, and by name, are in some cases ambiguous, their views unknown to China, or in fact hardliners, as the Chinese put it, willing to resist them. We've reached a point in this country where we now can triangulate very clearly where the positions are on China, whether it's trade, whether it is their geopolitical ambitions, whether it is their efforts to surveil and carry out espionage in this country, and line up those names with the governors who are pro-China, and to what degree, we don't know to what degree they have, if at all, compromised their states or this country. But now we have some clear abilities to do so, including, by the way, the lobbying groups in Washington, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, Wall Street, the Securities Association. We have wonderful ways to know exactly who is supporting this president and this president's interest, as well as the nation's, versus those of Beijing the CCP.
He's the first president in my lifetime, Lou, that's been tough on China in any way. Every other president in my lifetime has sought to appease China. And as you mentioned, as Secretary of State Pompeo made very clear, that the Chinese government labels all politicians on a scale of whether or not they're friendly or whether or not they're hawkish toward China. And the American people, especially my constituents in Indiana, they're paying attention to those elected officials who are far too friendly to China, who have led us down this path, this perilous path that we've been on for far too long, that has allowed China to take advantage of the United States in the way that it has and to unleash this pandemic on the U.S. and the rest of the world. They should be held accountable for it. We've laid out some avenues where we can make China pay for this pandemic. Instead of the American taxpayers, instead of my daughter's generation, who is going to shoulder the debt and the volume of national debt that's piling up by the day to pay for the pandemic, China should be paying for that, not my daughters, who are all three under the age of 10. Their generation shouldn't be paying for that. China should be paying for that instead.
Yes, as you say, neither your daughters nor mine or anyone's children should have to be paying for that. This is a matter, the number, a trillion dollars, I know that you've discussed that. $1 trillion in reparations, perhaps just simply be confiscatory, to say the very least, but it would be reparations. I can't wait to see how it all works out. But one thing I do know is people are getting a very clear-eyed view of what China is, what it stands for, and what it means to do. Congressman Jim Banks, you're a big part of the reason that that's the case. We appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
The true cost of this coronavirus, the loss of life and economic devastation, right now is immeasurable. But what can be counted is the money governments around the world have already spent trying to combat it. So far, it adds up to a staggering $6.5 trillion. In a class action launched in the United States, China is now being sued to get the money back. The lawsuit accuses Chinese authorities of negligence, lies, and cover-ups. In the UK, there are similar calls for compensation to be paid. And as Tara Brown reports, even here, there are demands the communist regime face a Nuremberg-style hearing to investigate its role in this human disaster.
In the heart of the coronavirus pandemic, New York has countless shocking stories of suffering.
I did really never dreamed that it would affect me in such a way, or my country, or the world.
For Lorraine Caggiano, the effect has been profound and brutal. 10 members of her family contracted COVID-19, including herself. On the 25th of March, her elderly aunt, Isabella Rizzo, succumbed to the virus. Still reeling from that loss, just 52 hours later, Lorraine's dad, Nick Caggiano, died alone in hospital.
You know, my father was, he was very afraid of doctors. I'm going to cry, I'm sorry. You know, just to get him to, for a yearly checkup, you'd have to really talk him into it, and he would just drive you crazy. So to me, to think of him laying there knowing this was going on, breaks my heart. He would have been so frightened, so frightened.
Nothing we can do will ever bring the members of Lorraine's family back from this tragic, tragic outcome. But we hope to be able to gain compensation for them, to help them get on with their lives the best way they can, and to try to put people back to normal.
Across the country, in deserted Florida,
busiest road in Boca Raton,
Jeremy Alters is the chief strategist behind a class action brought by the Berman Law Group. On behalf of all residents and businesses in the US, they are suing no less than the Chinese Communist Party, asking for reparations of more than $6 trillion.
And this lawsuit is based on the fact that they knew about this virus, they failed to contain the virus, they failed to let us know in a timely fashion about the virus, and have unleashed hell on our communities, on our countries, the United States, Australia, and everywhere else.
Is this suit saying, China, now you have to pay up?
Yes, it is. And here's why it's saying it. That money is not just governments losing money. That is people losing their jobs. That is people losing their homes. That is people losing their livelihoods. That is people being able to feed their children. That $6 trillion isn't coming back.
Jeremy's firm has so far signed up 10,000 people to the class action, a number that is growing each day. Along with the grief, it's clear they've tapped a deep well of anger. For Lorraine's mother, Natalie, who lost her husband and sister less than a month ago, alongside the heartache is a need for action.
I get this text message, and it says, my mother, you know, I want to sue China. And I'm like, oh God, she's going to drive me nuts now, and I don't have time for this, and I can't even think of this.
Was she serious, and is she still serious today?
Dead serious. My mother, yes, of course my mother is. She was dead serious. She's like, I want, because she's angry. So she feels like, okay, they should have told people about this. They should have been more forthcoming about this. Why is this happening? I lost my husband. I lost my sister.
For you, what do you want to achieve out of this lawsuit?
The truth. The truth for my dad, for my aunt, for my friend Helen, who died yesterday, for this lady I know named Adelaide, who's been on a ventilator for the last 20 days. I hope she makes it. Just the truth.
How much do you believe China owes the world?
Australia has invested over $200 billion to get us through this crisis to date.
To protect Australia.
Former barrister, now Queensland Liberal Senator Amanda Stoker, says Australia needs to be part of a global push to force the Chinese government to turn over its records, to reveal when it knew and what it knew about the coronavirus threat.
If you've got really strong factual findings that show there was a clear failure to comply with what were absolutely clear international obligations to report what was going on as the virus was identified and started to spread, to share medical data about how to manage it and about human-to-human transmission, then you might have the opportunity to pursue compensation at an international level.
But for Matthew Henderson, the facts are already in. In regards to the big questions from what you've seen so far out of China, did they lie?
Yes.
Did they cover up?
Yes.
Matthew is a former British diplomat to China who now runs Asia studies at UK think tank, the Henry Jackson Society. Matthew has co-authored a report pitching the case against China. He says China has breached international health regulations by hiding from the world what they knew in the early days of the outbreak.
It becomes clear that the way in which the Chinese side has managed this issue is negligent, culpable, and deliberately, willfully damaging, not only to the world at large, but to the Chinese people also.
For Matthew, the most appalling part of the cover-up was quashing early concerns about a new, frightening virus raised by Chinese doctors and scientists in Wuhan.
To make certain that people who really knew what that bug looked like, where it came from, why it was so infectious, why it bonded with people's lungs in a way that makes it uniquely lethal, that information was the first thing they suppressed that would have been really, really useful to the world to protect ourselves from what we now know is what it is, a lethal pandemic.
If they knowingly suppressed information about the threat of this potential pandemic, what did they hope to achieve by hiding it?
The classic face-saving approach that the Chinese Communist Party regularly takes in the face of challenges and disasters. You bury the truth, you convey the impression of order, and you hope to goodness me that you're going to be able to get away with it. Of course they didn't. Of course they couldn't.
Around the world, we've now received calls from 40 different countries.
Jeremy Alters is an unlikely champion of the class action, a lifelong Democrat now banded with a conservative firm to provide strategy. While it's not impossible, it is very difficult for the US to sue another country due to a protection known as sovereign immunity. Many legal experts give Jeremy very little chance of success. The critics of this class action say that your chances of even going to court are nil.
Right. Yeah, we've heard that. We've heard that our whole career. Those are intentionally reckless acts which affect our citizens. So legally, I would disagree with the naysayers. So the chances are not nil. They are very good. We will be able to pursue this in court. And at some point, it's not going to be tomorrow, but at some point, bring China to bear so that they have to pay for what they've done.
Even if the US courts find a case against the Chinese regime, few believe China will feel compelled to show up or pay up. the chances of China paying up are zero, aren't they?
No, not at all. They are much higher than zero, not 100%, but there are mechanisms to get them to do this. If they decide not to show up in court, then we will proceed forward to get a verdict against them and then collect on their assets here in the United States to help the people who have been harmed that are part of this lawsuit.
Senator Amanda Stoker believes that if the current international and legal forums are not able to hold China to account, there is another way. Do you expect that there might be an international tribunal of some sort that puts China on trial? Once we get over what we're all suffering now, is that the future, do you think?
Look, the nations of the world have the power to establish, through the International Court of Justice, an inquiry of that nature. Something a little bit like the way there was an independent examination in the form of the Nuremberg trials or in relation to the former Yugoslavia. We can set up, as a global community, tribunals of that nature.
But perhaps the most potent response to China will be to rethink doing business with them.
It's also a wake-up call for us, though, in a manufacturing sense, in a resources sense. It's an opportunity for us to be more willing to look at other places in the world with which we can trade that might better operate as global participants than the Communist Party of China has been of late.
If you are trying to present yourself as a member of a Davos-style win-win motherhood and apple pie, happy-clappy world where China's money brings benefits to all and sundry, and it doesn't, well then, you better go back and think about it. There is leverage, and there is practical good reason for us to take a defensive position in regards to our dealings, previously nominally legitimate dealings with China, which no longer are justified.
Over the last month, we've contacted the Chinese embassy four times requesting an interview. But we are still waiting for China to respond, along with the rest of a shell-shocked world.
Amazing grace.
And our fear and isolation never more poignantly reflected than in a recent performance by Andrea Bocelli, who at once sang to no one and everyone.
Look at the world. The images of Milan, Paris, London, New York, with no people, my heart broke. It was so, so upsetting. And I really hadn't cried much these past 2 weeks because it's all very intangible. But when I saw that and I saw the emptiness around the world, I had tears in my eyes and I had a pain in my heart from that. So no, this can never happen again.
No, I see.
Hello, I'm Tara Brown. Thanks for watching. To keep up with the latest from 60 Minutes Australia, make sure you subscribe to our channel. You can also download the 9Now app for full episodes and other exclusive 60 Minutes content.
Our lead story tonight, in several states in the United States, heavy damages are being sought from China up to the tune of $20 trillion for unleashing the COVID-19 virus, for being unable to contain the virus in China, and for wrecking the global economy. This is a scale of reparation that hasn't been sought since, relatively speaking, the First World War, which is when Germany had to pay for initiating the First World War. Across the world, there's a big debate raging about whether China can be made to pay. I want to show you what's happening in the United States. And then, as I said, Harish Salve joins us from London. Joshua Phillip from the Epoch Times joins us. He's looking at the cardinal sins of China. And we'll go deep tonight on whether it's feasible to make China pay. But before that, here's a look at all that's happened in the United States.
Nearly 2 lakh coronavirus cases across the world. Global death toll exceeding 1,90,000. As humanity battles one invisible enemy, the world is pointing fingers at China and demanding payback. Nations across the world are accusing Beijing of deceiving the public and suppressing critical information about the spread of COVID-19. And this time, countries are taking the legal route to make China pay. The loudest demand is from the United States.
We have a lot of discussions going on with China. Let me just put it this way. I'm not happy, okay? I'm not happy. And I spoke to them, and this could have been shut down a long time ago.
At least 3 American states have now filed actual lawsuits against China. Missouri was the first U.S. state to sue China, alleging that Beijing has caused irreparable damage to countries globally. Mississippi, too, has announced plans to file a lawsuit against China over its response to the novel coronavirus outbreak. The state's attorney general, Lynn Fitch, said that China must not be allowed to act with impunity.
They're directly responsible for, you know, the untold human suffering, the loss of life, and the economic damage. And so we brought suit against the Chinese government for their role in concealing the coronavirus. They were destroying evidence, silencing critics, silencing whistleblowers. This is all about getting to the truth and making sure that they're held accountable.
The Berman Law Group has also filed a lawsuit in South Florida seeking billions in damages. A $20 trillion lawsuit has been filed by American lawyer Larry Klayman and his advocacy group Freedom Watch, along with Texas company Bus Photos.
The damages so far, to the American small businesses are in the billions, probably the hundreds of billions of dollars at this point.
One of Germany's largest newspapers, Bild, has made out an unusual invoice. The Daily has billed China for the money it owed Berlin in coronavirus damages. Bild has drawn up an itemized invoice with 27 billion euro charge for lost tourism revenue between March and April, up to $7.2 billion for the German film industry, €1 million an hour for German airline Lufthansa, and $50 billion for German small businesses. That makes a grand total of 149 billion euros. Bild reckons that it's about 1,784 euros per person if Germany's GDP falls by 4.2%.
There is something like responsibility for a global health incident, a global health catastrophe like this. If authorities like they did in China fail to inform the rest of the world about the magnitude of this outbreak, and that is clearly what happened, and that has caused severe effects to countries all over the world.
A UK think tank is seeking global solidarity to sue China for $6.5 trillion for covering up coronavirus. As the chorus to make China pay grows, Beijing has called the claims absurd.
This so-called accusation has no factual and legal basis and is nothing short of absurdity. Since the coronavirus epidemic, China has been acting in a transparent manner to timely inform the WHO and relevant countries and regions of the epidemic situation, share the genome sequence with other countries, actively respond to the concerns of all parties, and strengthen cooperation with the international community. The so-called lawsuit is an abuse of litigation which violates basic legal principles.
These numbers seem astronomical right now, but this is payback being demanded from a world that is wounded almost like never before. The question is, will China be made to pay? Bureau Report, India Today.
Should China be made to pay? Can China be made to pay? How is this case likely to go in an international court? Joining us for perspective at this time, one of India's best-known advocates, live from London tonight, Harish Salve, former Solicitor General. With us also on this broadcast is Joshua Phillip. He's an investigative journalist with the Epoch Times. Last Friday, we carried a detailed broadcast on his documentary and how it points out the errors that China committed. Some of them seem quite deliberate. With us also at this moment is Adish Agarwal, president of the International Council of Jurists and senior advocate, part of the group that's demanding that China must be made to pay. My first question goes to Harish Salve tonight. Mr. Salve, in your opinion, is there a compelling case for China to be made to pay? $20 trillion worth of lawsuits have been filed across the United States. Do you believe there is enough material evidence at hand to press hard the case that China should pay the world for the damages COVID-19 has caused?
Well, if you ask me, do I believe China should pay, the answer is an unqualified yes. Will the legal systems of the world make China pay? Now, that's what we have to now see and how it works out. So, in America, they have this doctrine called effects doctrine, that if you commit an act which has its effect in the U.S., and clearly this has had a major effect in the U.S., then some of the states particularly have laws under which the courts would get jurisdiction in tort. So if you've done a civil wrong which has led to consequences in the states, the effects doctrine kicks in, the courts get jurisdiction. I don't know exactly what the law is in those specific states. I'm not an expert in American law, but I know broadly that they have such a principle. Then you have another legal hurdle, i.e. China is a sovereign republic, so they will possibly plead sovereign immunity. I doubt if they will even join the legal proceedings and agree to participate, but even if they do, they have, even if they don't, the court will pass judgment in their absence. If they do, of course, nothing like it, then the court gets jurisdiction. But if they don't, the second step then is the court passes judgment. How do you enforce it? Then there is the protection of the Geneva Convention against consular assets and sovereign assets, which may prevent certain assets, like, for example, you can never attach an embassy or a high commission. But if there are pure commercial assets, then the law may allow you to attach and move against those assets. And that's a matter of really of domestic law, which implements international law. So in America, that is the other thing which will be in play. But I'm more fascinated by the fact that Germany has made this claim against China. And although I have not been able to access exactly what the claim is, if it is based on principles of public international law, and it's before the, if it is framed in a way of violating some governance of some international conventions to which China is a party, then it may have far greater bite in the ICJ.
As one of India's sharpest lawyers, if a client were to come to you, Mr. Salve, and say, help me build a case against China, what would be your arguments to convince an international judge that the damage that China caused is deliberate and therefore Beijing must pay up, and big time?
Well, one thing which all of us know to a small extent, not to a full extent, is that China has suppressed information from the international community. We need more details of what exactly happened in Wuhan in the initial days, how it happened, what was the information which they were possessed of, and why they misled the international community, because they virtually lulled the rest of the world into a false sense of complacence. Otherwise, these lockdowns of people moving in and out of China could have been enforced right at the very beginning. Why they did it, the reasons could be plain simple, that they didn't want to put their commercial travel in and out of China into difficulty, or it can be more layers of conspiracy, like somebody has suggested they were signing some trade deal with the U.S. God only knows what the truth is, and somebody needs to investigate. So your answer is, if a client came to me, I would say, well, you may have a case. Go and find out exactly what China has been up to.
And the one person who's been trying to go out and find out exactly what China has been up to is Joshua Philip, who joins us from New York. You've put together a compelling documentary explaining the errors that China committed. What makes you so confident, Joshua, that these are deliberate sins? These aren't just mistakes that happen because there's a virus which you can't control, but these are sins of omission and commission for which China is directly and responsible.
As we speak right now,
The Chinese Communist Party is not allowing U.S. scientists into China to try to figure out what happened. It is denying access to French researchers to this laboratory to figure out whether there was a leak at this laboratory. The Chinese Communist Party from the get-go has been arresting whistleblowers. There are at least three citizen journalists who have disappeared for trying to tell the world what was happening. At the Epoch Times, we've been getting leaked documents on almost a daily basis that show in every single instance the Chinese Communist Party, as we speak, has not only lied to the world, but is continuing to lie to the world about the seriousness, about the danger, about the risks, and about what's actually happening in their country with this virus. Even Iran, one of China's closest allies, is calling out the Chinese Communist Party for misleading them about how serious this virus was, about the risks of it spreading outside China's borders, and about how virulent it is. And so Iran, even, one of their closest allies, is calling them out. The entire world is getting behind these different lawsuits and calling them out. The Australian Prime Minister now is calling for all WHO members to launch investigations into the Chinese Communist Party. And so from the get-go, the Chinese Communist Party was lying. It was arresting doctors. It was silencing people. There were many, many documented cases of this. And to this day...
But Beijing responds by calling your charges absurd, Joshua. They say this is down to U.S. domestic politics because President Trump is coming under so much criticism for his inability to handle the pandemic in the United States, which is why they are creating the bogey of China to make it seem as if Beijing is to pay for America's own incompetence.
Yeah, so the Chinese Communist Party was the one spreading those rumors originally. They were creating disinformation claiming the virus came from the United States and not from China. And of course, unfortunately, in the U.S., we have very harsh divisions in media, and they tend to latch onto anything that will make Trump look bad. Whether these cases are true, I'd say it's very, very debatable. Of course, Trump has pointed to the fact that the Chinese Communist Party lied to the WHO. The WHO repeated its lies. The CDC was also acting on an inefficient information. And so the bodies that the United States would rely on to make decisions, namely the WHO and the CDC, have been getting their information from China, and China's been feeding them false information.
Joshua Philip, for joining us from New York, thank you very much. Adish Agarwal, President of the International Council of Jurists and a senior advocate, I want to understand from you the case that you are trying to build. Why is it that you believe that this isn't just something that's happening in the United States, but India too can join and seek claim damages against Beijing? Explain what you're trying to do, Adish.
We have not filed any case in India. We have filed before United Nations Human Rights Council because there is a violation of human rights and the covenant India had also signed, China had also signed, and most of the countries have signed. So China is bound by the rules of that international human rights. So there is a violation of Rule 25, Article 25.1, which says if there is any such type of epidemic, then you have to inform the world community. Intentionally, it was not informed. Even up to 14th of February, it was not the WHO was not given permission to visit effectively. So, and first patient was officially declared was on 1st December. So, during this time, 17,500,000 people left on 31st of...
What kind of damages are you pressing for, Adish?
We are pressing that all countries should be paid for the losses incurred by the people of those countries and the government. And it will be announced by United Nations Human Rights Council and they will report to Security Council of United Nations and then it will be implemented.
Mr. Salve, it's one thing to go out and file a case in different international courts. It's another to be able to go out and win this case. As a keen student of legal history, give us a historical context. From what I understand, reparations haven't been very successful for several years now. It happened in a big way during the just period after the First World War when Germany was made to pay. And many say it's because the German people felt that their country was wrongly made to pay for the First World War that Adolf Hitler came to power in Germany, which is why we had the Second World War in the first place. What's the historical context and how does that apply to the possibility of securing reparations at this moment, Mr. Salvi?
See, World War I and World War II have been the source of events which have been a rich source of the evolution of public international law because of the events which transpired during those two massive events. World War I led to the Treaty of Versailles, and the Treaty of Versailles is... one particular view was it humiliated Germany to the extent that it reacted, and that was what gave political punch to Hitler's campaign. The rest is history, as they say. But those were treaty-based. So if Germany was post-World War I in a position that the rest of the world could come together in the League of Nations and get Germany to sign a treaty for reparations. But as you rightly said, reparation today, in today's day and age, I don't see China agreeing to sign any treaty for any reparations. They have already indicated a very aggressive stance, saying they are not responsible and they have also suffered. China believes that they are a sovereign nation and nobody can touch them. They are the world's second largest, some people say the world's biggest economic power. And militarily and nuclearly, they are very, very strong. So why should they agree to sign any treaty with anybody? If the world unites in a way that China is put into a corner and put under such economic distress that they have to sign reparations, that's the only way it'll happen. So this is a real test for the world post-corona. Are we going to rise above our individual economic interests, our individual political interests, and come together as one world against a country which brazenly and openly says they are not obliged to share information with you. Transparency is unnecessary. They don't consider it necessary to respect human rights as the rest of the world does. And they've pretty much been telling the rest of the world to take a walk where it comes to general principles by which the civilized world lives. So are we going to allow this to continue to happen, or are we as a world going to unite and say, well, if you want to live in this isolationist fashion, then we will not do business with you? What happens is individual countries say my economic or commercial interest is such that I must do business with China, or my geopolitical interest is such that I must be China's friend, and then that's the end of all global unity.
Mr. Harish Salve for joining us from London, Joshua Philip for joining us from New York, and Adish Agarwal for joining us from Delhi with your thoughts. Thank you very much. Hello everyone, this is Rahul Kamal here. Hope you enjoyed this video. For the latest news and analysis, like and subscribe the India Today YouTube channel, and don't forget to press the bell icon to stay updated.
So the question of the day is, should China pay pandemic reparations? Should China pay pandemic COVID-19 reparations? Right now, it's just talk. Because it's still going. And which is interesting. This is going to be a very interesting election year. Matter of fact, let's see. Coronavirus update: U.S. nears 1 million confirmed cases, and the global count surpasses 3 million. And also in the news, as a headline. Trending topic. New development in the alleged Biden assault saga. A former neighbor of Tara Reid, or Reedy, the ex-Senate aide who accused Joe Biden of sexually assaulting her in 1993. Why don't these people, 27 years later, I don't recall her name being brought up at all when he was up, you know, being nominated for VP under, Obama. But in any event, he's running for president. And 27 years later, me too. Anyway, this lady claimed that she can validate part of Reed's or Reedy's allegation. And in quotes, she says, "I remember talking about it." So you got people slinging mud on Biden, Me Too style, and then I'm sure this pandemic, coronavirus, will be a maybe not the virus itself, but people talking about what they will do to prevent something like this from happening in the future. That some kind of way might be a campaign issue. But in any event, should China pay pandemic reparations? And if they do, well, actually, it's just talk right now. But, you know, there's quite a few countries that they'd have to pay. And then comes in many forms. And then if we look at a legal definition of reparations, I guess the first thing they have to prove is that China formally declare war on anybody and vice versa. In any event, should China have to pay pandemic reparations? All I got to say there before I go to the phone line is, anyway, I was going to compare it to slave reparations, but we didn't talk enough about that. Anyway, 314, should China pay pandemic reparations? If it ever comes.
Oh, yeah, where you been lately? I thought the virus had conquered you, man.
No, you know, I had a tummy ache yesterday, so I said, well, let me play these audios because I don't want to get talking and then I got to go to the bathroom or something like that. So,
hey, I sent you an email on that one YouTube, Ballin' on Baltic. Can you find that anymore?
Wait a minute. Yeah. It's on YouTube.
When's the last time you seen it?
Oh, wait a minute. Let me go.
I tried to bring it up and they said that it's down.
Wait a minute. I'm going, looking for it right now. Balling on. I tried to.
As far as the question to your, to the topic, I think that's what's going to happen anyway. I know the United States is going to go after them because of the debt that China holds.
Yeah, China does. And, the United States does owe China money. You're right. I don't see it on here.
So, absolutely, I think it's going to happen. And I think that if they can get that settlement, they need to go ahead and do it. I'm for the United States being the top dog in the world. Why? Because I'm a United States citizen. I benefit from that.
Right.
My family benefits from it. People benefit from that. 400,000 blacks in the military benefit from that. And
now, do you think it'll go that far?
Yeah, I do.
They take it to some
Trump
type of
will do
world
it.
Court. Well, yeah,
Trump
will
do it.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah, see, Hillary and them won't because Hillary and them has been circumvented by China, as they are, as many of them are. But especially, I wouldn't be circumvented by my enemy. China's the enemy of the United States, Russia not, although it appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the inroads that China has made under the Obama administration in particular, it's nowhere in the world. If I was president for 90 days, I wouldn't have let that happen. You know, taking major inroads in food supply, medicine. And I got to talk to a friend of mine who's in independent energy. He has an independent energy company. What is he seeing in that industry too? Because I understand that they're trying to get control of some energy firms. They supposedly have a seaport there in Alaska. And I know they have been trying to get seaports elsewhere in the United States. Not only them, but Saudi Arabia, too, at one time. One of those Arabs. But those things you just don't let your enemies take control of, even have a play in. They in the hotels, especially exclusive hotels, remind me of the Japanese years ago. And I think they was trying to get some toll roads. Now, if you look at what they've done in some African countries, like Kenya, Zimbabwe, where they took over a radio station, Kenya, where they took over a port because they missed the payment, and they were controlling for 90-some-odd years, that's totally ridiculous, I think. You know? So, yes, I think that the United States had the capability and the grounds for, I think they should bring those issues up.
Well, like you said, on Trump's watch, maybe he's going to bring it up. It'll have to be soon before this election.
Well, I think he'll do well in the election. What you got, idiot?
I'm surprised this stuff on I hadn't heard from me too in a while, and then somebody's trying to sling some mud on Biden.
Well, they're not trying to. They're telling the truth. Is it not the same thing that they brought up on Justice Kavanaugh?
Well, that's true. Kavanaugh, Clinton.
Is it not the same thing that they brought up on Moore in Alabama?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. If you're in the public eye, you're going to get some mud on you occasionally.
So is it not the same thing that they've done on Bill Cosby? So why come the news media is not jumping on this with Joe Biden? It goes to show you that the bias that exists in the news media nowadays. Now I understand when countries undergo coup d'etat, one of the first things that the conquering government does is get rid of the damn news service.
True.
You had a journalist killed in, I guess, Saudi Arabia, and everybody was raising hell. Well, hell. I wonder why.
Yeah,
so, the least we forget, huh?
Yeah. You know,
by the way,
they done took this down, man. You're right.
They done took it down. Some black groups probably got pissed off and took it down. You need to try to get a hold of that guy and see if you can get a copy of that.
Yeah, I tried to look him up. His channel isn't even coming up. I think it's Big B Kel.
We'll do a Google on it and try to get a hold of them and see if we can get a copy of that. I used to copy those. I had software that would do that, but I don't have it no more. Capture, you know, you could capture a whole YouTube video and download and store it. But a lot of things that goes against the grain, like CNN want to get rid of Diamond and Silk.
Oh, they do?
Not CNN, Fox. Fox News do.
Well,
because of something that they said about the coronavirus that everybody else is saying also.
Well,
look at the mess that Rachel Maddow has said about Donald Trump. She's still around.
Man, you got me looking all over this internet for this thing now.
I keep telling you, the black don't raise complain about it. I bet you it was blacks that did it. White folks don't give a damn about you telling the truth.
But
it's Negroes that don't. It's the Negroes that don't want other blacks to call them out, and that's when you get called all kind of names and everything. I like the old way we used to have meetings back in the day. You'd be in a room around a table. Somebody make your ass mad, you just get up and smack the hell out of them. Then it'd be on fisticuffs.
Yeah, that's old school. Now they got weapons.
Yeah, we got weapons now.
Man, it was up there for years, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they must have taken it down.
At least a week ago.
Huh?
At least a week ago, because I was looking for it. I tried to play it.
Man. And I can't even find his, I think his YouTube name is Big B Kel, I think. But I can't even find his channel. Oh, boy.
Well,
he might be somewhere. He's somewhere online.
Well, I know if he is, you'll find him. I know another person might know what's going on with it. I'll drop him a text message. But anyway, that's my response to your topic.
Okay. All right. Well, I still got a bit of it. I ate something that didn't agree with me. So, what I'm going to do is sign off so I won't. I didn't have no episodes while I was on. That's like I said yesterday, I was between here and the bathroom. That's why I didn't come on. In any event, all right, what we'll do is that's it for today because I got to take care of my stomach. We'll see you guys tomorrow.